Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to the show. I am back after an impromptu little break last week. I will admit I left Clay holding the bag with very short notice, but like the pro he is, he just ran with it and put on an awesome show for you guys. And I know you can agree with me, Clay. Thank you publicly. I thanked you privately, but thank you publicly for doing that. I appreciate it.
Teammate, that's what we do.
That's what we do.
I'm sure if something fell for me and I had to bail at the last minute, you would do exactly the same. So happy.
Absolutely.
Happy to
Absolutely. Yeah. We have such a good vibe. Like we're very in tune with these things and it's very cool. It makes both our lives relatively easy when life is typically not easy.
No, I mean, we've said it before that, you know, this is like a two email thing. It's like two emails and that we just fire it up and do the show.
Yeah, it's so great. It really, and I mean, we're so literal. We said it's like one email out. Hey, what do you think of this? Or, you know, like, what was that? I don't know. It was like a week or so ago. I'm like, I got nothing. You know, not that there's not anything going on in the world. There's constantly things going on to talk about. But it was almost like, it was like the same stuff we've all, not just you and I, but us collectively as a society have been talking about nonstop. And we're both kind of like, you know, let's give it another day and see what happens. But I don't know, it happens. And I think we all get really saturated with the sameness of everything.
Yeah. But let's run the intro music and get this thing off the ground.
Let's do it. Oh, and now we had our topics all lined up, and then a little curveball in a funny, fun way was thrown at us. And as we've told you in the past, typically we record our episode, you know, a day or two in advance of you guys seeing it, and this is no different. So the funny thing that we're going to be talking about right this minute that came up. I don't know, Clay, I feel like, you know, we always talk about, having our popcorn for the show that is our government. Well, I'm ready. Are you? So we're going to run the clip. We're going to eat our popcorn. If you want, pause the show for a second, go get your popcorn and come right back. Because when you do, you get to watch this.
Like he's self-made. Sir, I wish he was in the truck with me when I was building my plumbing company. Myself and my wife was running the office because I sure remember working pretty hard and long hours. Pretends like he's self-made. What a clown. Fraud. Always has been. Always will be. Quit the tough guy act and these Senate hearings. You know where to find me. Any place, anytime, cowboy. Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Oh, stop it.
Is that your solution, every problem?
No, sit down. Sit down. Okay. You know, you're a United States Senator.
Activate.
Oh, okay. Sit down, please.
All right.
Can I respond?
Hold it. If Hold we on. Can, no, I have the mic. Said. I'm sorry.
This is Hold what it. He said.
You'll have your time.
Okay.
Can I respond?
Oh, no, you can't. This is a hearing.
Oh, my goodness. So listen, my dual nature is in full effect here. There is the half of me that is appalled and disgusted that our representatives are behaving like this, and shame on them. And then there's the other side of me that just loves a good fight and was really, really ready for it. Clay, how are you feeling? We'll tell you all about who these people are and what was going on there. But how are you feeling about
the same way?
That?
I am the same way. I, you know, decorum in chambers. I'm a huge proponent for that. I think that that's something that we, as a nation, you know, we've seen all of these third world countries. You see the clips on YouTube and all that other stuff where you've got, you know, mayhem in the, you know, their chambers of whatever form of government they have. That is paramount. I think it's a huge thing. On the flip side, like, there are times in life, and I think we're moving further and further away from it, where men need to settle things like men. And I think this is one of those cases where the answer, truthfully, is throw hands. Like, I want to, you know, the tough guy, you said we're going to talk about who these guys are. One of these guys is the leader of the Teamsters, which is a notoriously, you know, tough guy attitude organization. But then you've got a U.S. senator who is a former MMA fighter. Like, this guy's not a poser. Like, this right. is a legitimate, I will hurt you kind of guy. And I'm torn. I'm like you. I don't know if I want him to be prim and proper, and or if I want him to, you know, scrap and settle it like men. It's tough.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and then you add the next layer of comedy, which is Bernie Sanders being the guy, the referee of this, you know, near match. It's impossible to believe that this is real life. And yet here it is.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you. And to hear Bernie with his accent, you'll get your time. You know, it's like, and he even sounds like he's 115 years old. The yes. guy's a cartoon character as a human being.
Yes.
But yeah, it just the fact that he was presiding, the fact that it's the Teamster guy and the MMA guy who's from Oklahoma, by the way, you know, he's not some soft sided. He's a Midwest, you know, kind of guy. And just this whole, like, you can't write this. You can't write this. Yeah,
you can't.
SNL. Saturday Night Live in the next 10 days, guaranteed
there will be some
sort of skit associated with that. Promise.
There has to be. They would be really dropping the ball on that if they missed.
Totally
that
blown. Because, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Oh, wow. It was something for sure. And again, you know, I can't decide whether to laugh or shake my head and laugh, which I think that's basically what we're doing. But one last question, then we're going to move on after this. We just had to share that because it was just too wow not to.
Keep eating your popcorn, people.
I know. Get that popcorn, you guys. Jeez, I mean, always have it ready. Every day of your life, have the popcorn ready because it's always a show. But last question on it. Who do you think would have won?
Oh, without question, Mullen, the MMA guy. Oh, for sure.
I agree.
He'd have broke that Teamster guy in half.
In a second, right?
Yeah. You saw him stand up. That thing's still cut. He's still in great shape. And I can promise you that fat bald guy, that guy did not look like that if he stood up. Not a chance.
No way. He probably a foot shorter and, you know.
Even if he was a big guy, don't care. Senator Mullen would have busted him up, guaranteed.
He would have. I do hope they take it to a ring because I would watch awesome. That fight. I would pay for that. I would pay per view.
Oh, I'd shell out the $50 easily.
Maybe this is the new trend. Maybe we could just get them all in there. You know, any dispute, just go in the ring, just fight it out. Let the best man or woman win. I'm good with that. And you know, it's funny. And I know I said we'd move on from it, but I just have to comment on something you said. I do also believe in the whole, like, if you're going to talk smack, and especially like in guy world, if you're going to talk smack, if you're going to be a tough guy, you better be ready to throw hands because, you know, sometimes somebody needs to get knocked out. It's that whole thing. And I forget who's like credited with saying, I think it's actually Mike Tyson who's
punched
credited.
In the mouth. Yeah.
Right. And it was like, you know, something to the effect of y'all got way too comfortable running your mouth on social media or on the internet, you know, for you get punched in the mouth for in real life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the nice Christian girl in me wants to say no violence, but push that other side, Clay.
sometimes violence is the answer.
Sometimes it is.
And the way it works. Yep.
And if y'all don't agree with us, that's perfectly fine. Go ahead and tell us that we're wrong in the comments. I don't mind. Clay doesn't mind. We could take it. We'll take you outside. No, I'm kidding. All right, let's see. Now let's move on. What are we talking about? We are talking about, oh, we want to talk about the campaign trail. The latest updates on that. And if anybody just rolled their eyes, oh no, we're not going to talk. Yeah, we are going to talk about, because there's stuff going on. Tim Scott has paused his campaign or suspended his camp, right? That's the proper terminology. Yeah. That they're using. So he suspended his campaign. It seemed kind of abrupt. It sounded like everyone was a little blindsided. Am I wrong on that?
No, I got the same read too. I have a feeling, you know, in proximity to the last debate, you know, maybe his performance wasn't what they expected it to be, or maybe that was kind of a yardstick within the campaign to say, hey, look, if we don't get the reaction out of this that we're hoping to, then we're never going to make up ground, and it's time to just kind of call it. So That's my guess, is it was a result of his performance. You know, if they didn't see an uptick in popularity, whatever their measuring stick was, I'm sure it has to do with the last debate. And he, you know, decided that, you know, now is the time.
Right. And I think it said something like his numbers were like in the single digits, and they just simply weren't budging, wasn't gaining any traction, like you said. And so I did see that two of his like major endorsers have now endorsed Nikki Haley, your girl, Nikki. So they gave her the endorsement. It sounds like some more are to follow, but maybe haven't fully committed yet. And he has not, and correct me if I'm wrong, he has not endorsed anybody as of yet. So it kind of made it sound like he wasn't going to, right? Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't seen it yet. I have not seen anything truthfully from him other than, you know, hey, I'm calling it kind of thing, but no follow-up since then. So.
Yeah. He got a little flack. I saw that he got a little flack for, I guess it was something like, I don't know, half hour before he pulled the pin. He did like a last minute donation call, essentially, on their, you know, campaign website or something. And then like 15 minutes later was like, yeah, okay, so I'm done. Bye. So that, yeah. I think that raised a few eyebrows, like, wow, you didn't know 15 minutes ago that you were calling it, but you're, you know, so I don't know. I don't know.
I'd have to go back and look at that. I didn't hear that. That's very interesting. And it would raise eyebrows for me too. I mean, that would certainly be a question. And like we said, the wording of what they're doing with the campaign matters, you know, right. The suspended versus whatever. I think there's a terminology that matters. And I think that drives what they can and can't do with the campaign funds after they suspend or do whatever.
Okay.
So, but yeah, very interesting to do a donation pull and then, you know, pop smoke and be done.
Yeah.
You know, within an hour. That's very, very strange.
And I'll tell you, to be honest with you, I have, you know, from the get-go, I have liked him. I did love him. I didn't have strong feelings about him, but I liked him well enough. And I have a feeling that might be a general consensus of people, like, you know, very lukewarm, like, he's okay. You know, and you don't win elections with just being, okay. And I guess he got that message too. Tim
Scott. The last
Scott
guy that won,
out.
The last guy that won with, he's okay, was President Carter.
Yeah.
Those are not footsteps that you want to follow in, I don't think.
No, definitely not. Yeah. Oh boy. So I think I did this to you last time too, but any guesses who the next fly to drop is? It's not a very nice way of putting it, but.
No, we haven't. I don't think we talked that directly, but I mean, okay. You know, you've got Vice President Pence who bailed two weeks ago, and then now you've got Tim Scott. So you've got the four real front runners are still there. And I don't even really consider Chris Christie a front runner, but you know, he's said he's in it till the end. So, okay, fine. So you've got him, you know, you've got Vivek, you've got DeSantis, and Nikki Haley. Realistically, you know, Chris Christie is the next one to go.
Yes, I agree.
If he hangs on, it's purely out of stubborn spite. But in popularity, you know, if you're going in, I guess it would be ascending order or maybe descending order, however you want to look at it. You know, he's the bottom of the barrel right now. So he would be the next one, I think, to bail or to be pushed out. But I don't see. I don't see any of the other three leaving anytime soon. So
yeah, same. It would be a huge shocker if one of those top three did. I think you know, Vivek is of course very ambitious and very determined, and Nikki Haley's got a lot of traction. She's got a lot of traction, and that traction keeps growing. I think her popularity is continuing to grow. So she'd have to make like a major misstep.
Yeah,
I think, you know, and she's pretty polished. I don't know if she will make a major misstep, but we shall see. We shall see. Now, as far as the Democrats, what do we got going on with these bunch of coconuts?
So I think what you're seeing is more and more from the mainstream of the party,
right?
Worried about the president.
Yes,
I think it's not the moderates. It's not the fence riders. It's not the middle of the road Democrats right now. You're starting to see, and it's not even a lack of popularity because it's coming across different. It's not he's not necessarily doing a good job, or it's not even there's becoming a little bit more criticism of Bidenomics, but most of it is truthfully, one, he's not going to make it through another 4 years. And two, he's in such decline right now that voting for him is, you know, or even assuming he's going to be capable of running in a year through the election is not weighing well with people. The expectation is that he is going to bail, whether forced to or whatever. So, you know, he is losing more support on a daily basis, which reinforces the who's next in line discussion. Mm-hmm. And I still think of late it's Gavin Newsom, which is so frightening. It's not even funny.
Yes. Yeah, it really is. It's a terrifying thought. I find him to be probably one of the most slimy looking human beings that I have seen in some time. And, you know, there's a large pool to choose from for slimy political individuals. But he, I think, takes the cake for me, you know, and just as yet another proof of his awfulness, this whole latest thing with San Francisco, cleaning up the streets of San Francisco.
I saw that.
The Asia Pacific something or other economic blah, blah, blah summit. It was very professional of me to term it that way, but that's what you got. I have it on here, but we're good. Oh, it's the I'll do it right. It is the Asia Pacific Political Action Committee Summit. I mean, what, so many words. Enough already. But yeah, you know, managed to clean up the streets of homeless and, you know, just absolute filth and disgustingness and the tents and everything that comes along with that. In short order, just in time for this summit to happen, which of course begs two questions. One, if you could do it, why didn't you do it sooner? Where the heck did you put all these people? Where are all these homeless people? It's a little freaky.
If you weren't going to do it for the citizens and the taxpayers of San Francisco on their behalf, but you'll do it on the behalf of visitors so that they understand and they think that San Francisco and California, United States is this beautiful, amazing place. Like, your priorities are jacked, man, because it's not about your constituents at that point. It's about your image. And then, where did you displace all these previously, you know, homeless or displaced people in the, you know, where did they go? You know, did they just move them to another place? Did they arrest them? What did they do? You know, and truthfully, in great California fashion, they're probably in a 4-star hotel somewhere.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's more than likely where they are. You know, I was on
the state's dime.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. Before you said that, I was thinking, geez, did they go by way of, you know, what they like to do with the migrants, as they call them, and put them on planes in the middle of the night and disperse them throughout the rest of the country? But I think your notion there is probably more likely. It's madness. You know, and what gets me every time, every single time, is that the people that vote these people in, like, are you kidding me? This is what you voted in. This is what you said seems like a good idea. And wasn't there something to get rid of him at one point?
Yeah. Not long ago, they were trying to,
impeach
him or whatever
I know. I was trying to think, is it impeach? I think so.
I mean, essentially, and that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
They were trying to get him out of office and he beat it, you know, okay, fine.
Yeah.
You know, I was in Florida just this past weekend and was talking to some people down there. I was at a big, veteran event and talking to some local Floridians, and they were talking about the migration, right? Which they always, you know, they've always dealt with snowbird northerners, as they call them. You know, they come down for the winter, they're down there for 4 or 5 months through the cold weather, and then they go back, whether it's Chicagoans, Midwesterners, or that New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts, those folks. But either way, they were short term and then they would go home. And now they're seeing a significant uptick in those that are not leaving anymore. And what's irritating the Floridians, as much as they like the money coming in, is the fact that these people are moving. And I've heard this from people in Texas too. You know, you're getting all these people moving in, and then they're trying to make Florida look like New York, New Hampshire, Chicago.
Right.
And it's like, no, that's, you know, if you're trying to escape that, then fine. Escape it and come down here and live Florida style, but don't bring your crap with you, you know, and you're getting the same thing coming out of LA, and it's hitting Arizona, New Mexico, and Texas. They're making the big transplant out of LA or out of California in general. Mm-hmm. And they're getting the same thing. And it's, you know, if you're leaving there for a reason, then leave that there. Like, don't bring that shit along with you. It's not doing any good.
Yeah, let's not do the, let's not be the definition of insanity, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, and expecting different results. With reason, of course, as we all know, I find myself saying every single time, every single day, that I can't believe that this is real life. I can't believe that people are this stupid. You know, and I know that's a harsh word to call a mass of people, but I mean, it is sheer stupidity. Like, there are so many things going wrong with our country in this world right now. And yet you keep voting the same people in, you keep, condoning the same types of behaviors and made up language and everything that goes on. And again, expect different results. It's like, where the hell are people's brains at? And I'm only talking about a section of people.
Yeah.
But boy, oh boy, they're a noisy section, aren't they?
Yes. And so this occurred to me today. You know what Gavin Newsom doesn't have that has been rife with or been running through a lot of our senior level politicians and you know, famous people, like cancer? His name has never been mentioned with the Epstein Island.
Never. Oh.
So he's clean away from that. And that whole thing, if he ends up being a candidate, and this is Clay conspiracy theory, and I'm not much of a conspiracy theorist, but he doesn't have that hanging over him. And then that all of a sudden becomes less and it starts to go away. Right. And then the Epstein client list becomes less of a thing. People stop talking about it. It's all that kind of stuff. So keep that in the back of your mind, too, as a, you know, kind of a little flavor packet.
I will. So I'd love to be able to say Clay called it. Clay called it. See, I love saying that because we've gotten to say that a few times on a few different topics. So I do. I'm manifesting that to happen. he is an interesting guy. I find him absolutely repugnant. I can't put it any other way. I'm just going to call it what it is. And that's the interesting thing about today's politics, that the things that back in the day, back in the Clinton era, that were so scandalous and shocking and would, you know, eliminate people from, I mean, I'm forgetting the politician's name, but there's been several who had like affairs and just their campaigns died because that was like a, you can't represent. And now here's a guy who, you know, he was married to, what's her name? Kimberly Guilfoyle, married for a few years and comes to light that he was cheating on her. It was very public stuff. I mean, I'm not saying anything that hasn't already been, a topic before. And now we're in an era of, you know, of moral decay where it's like, yeah, whatever, who cares? You know, and that's the general attitude that we just don't care about these things. It doesn't really matter. It's not a blemish on his character or anything like that, like it once was. And I find things like that very interesting and very telling about society at large right now, where the heads, collective heads are at. And, you know, and speaking of her, she actually, you know, there's a couple of things, there's a couple different things. So there were, you know, there are people like Fetterman, which just still makes me laugh that he's the one that said this, kind of called him out and said, you know, if you're running, man up and say that you're running. You know, you're running like a shadow campaign. And, you know, there's some things that kind of go along with that, that maybe prove that a little bit. He's doing like these media blitzes. Yeah. He's putting himself very front and center.
He put together
Yes, exactly. Went to China. That's very, you know, another eyebrow raiser. I think he put together like a political action committee. Like he's doing all of these things that are very, I'm running for president like, and, but he's not coming out and saying it. So yeah, that's kind of shady. And, but his ex-wife, Kimberly Guilfoyle, she's, quoted as saying that he always wanted to be president. So, you know, you have people from his camp, so to speak, yeah, that are like, yeah, come on, this is a given. So
for sure.
Yeah. So do we think it's a given? I think it's a given.
I think so. If it's not 2024, it's definitely 2028.
Yeah, definitely.
No question about it. He is in line. He's in that ascendancy. That's where he's headed. And this, you know, this is, it will be one or the other for sure. No question.
So here's a question I have, Clay, and I don't know if you can answer it or if any of our listeners can answer it. My question is, as I watch all of this as a horrified spectator, what I wonder is, the Democratic Party, are they in turmoil, in chaos right now as far as what to do about Biden? Because, you know, nobody wants Kamala Harris. And, you know, so let's float Gavin Newsom out there. Like, is this turmoil and chaos behavior, or is this calculated planning going on? So that's kind of my real question. Is it chaos or is it calculated? What do you think?
So I think it is good planners. And then, you know, obviously from being in the military, this is how we kind of operate. You have as many branches and sequels, which are, you know, kind of branches off of the main plan, or sequels are kind of like, you know, as you move on, they'll have as many as they think are necessary, and they'll war game through, you know, multiple outcomes to make sure that they've got all of their bases covered. So I'm sure the initial plan, and I'll stick with this till the day I die, was that the initial plan A was Biden's health sustains itself and he makes it through 8 years. Plan B was he doesn't make it through 8 years. And at the end, near the end of his first term, he hands off to Kamala Harris, which gives her a free 12 to 18 months plus eight more years behind that. That was plan B. Now, plan C became immediate when they realized how horrible she really is. And mm-hmm. that no matter what, even if she gets 12 to 18 months in the White House because he can't physically do it, she's certainly not getting elected as right. the president of the United States. So right, that's plan C, but then you get into the branches of, well, who is it then? You know, and it's most, you know, is it, if it's not Kamala, then is it Michelle Obama? Is it mm-hmm. Gavin Newsom? They've got their stable, right? And I think, yes, there's a little bit of chaos, but I think this is all sequenced out. I think it is planned in, but it's all, you know, event driven, kind of like, well, if this doesn't work, then this, right? They've got a matrix. Right. They probably do actually have like a decision matrix, like we use in the military, like if and then. So if the president can't do 4 years and Kamala Harris sucks, then we'll put, you know, we'll start floating ideas. You know, if we float Michelle Obama and she is interested, then we'll run her. You know what I mean? Like they'll have all those conditions laid out. So I think it is a controlled decision-making process. It seems chaotic from the outside.
Right.
But I think the only fly in the ointment, whatever you want to call it, is I don't think President Biden wants to quit. And I think that's screwing everything up for them.
Yes.
I think he refuses to acknowledge the fact that he's incapable. I think that he refuses to let go of the reins. And unless he dies, they're stuck with him.
Right.
I think they are, because he's not going to give it up willingly, which I don't think anybody planned for. I think they thought he would go quietly into the night and just be done.
Sure. Sure. And the older and more adult he gets, the more agitated and angry he gets. And he's throwing
get off of my lawn.
Yeah. He is like the poster man person for get off my lawn. That is him 100% with his, you know, kind of crazy outbursts. And you know, when you have news stories getting leaked that his own staff is, you know, too frightened to go into a room alone with him, you know, besides all the sniffing and all of that. But the fact that he has a proclivity for, you know, berating and yelling and swearing at them. So they go in by twos and threes to kind of buffer each other. So, you know, and stories like that are coming out, you know, who do you think's leaking these stories? Come on.
Oh yeah. No, it's the close staff for sure. I mean, just today there was 400 members of the administration unnamed. They won't sign their name to it, but they sent him a letter that said they disagree with the way that he's handling the Israel Hamas thing. Wow. Like just flat, you know, and inside the administration, this isn't, you know, these are close to the source kind of people.
Right.
So, but again, this isn't the chief of staff of the White House coming out and saying this isn't the whoever, you know, his cabinet or anybody like that. This is 400 unnamed people, you know, in the administration saying that he's screwing this up. So, it's there's a lot of turmoil in the White House right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And what, you know, I mean, I feel two ways about that, that, you know, my instinctive response is what a bunch of cowards. What a bunch of cowards, put your name on it, own it, you know, toughen up. And then the flip side of that, of course, is, wow, what kind of power is being yielded over there that these people, 400 people are too scared of the consequences of putting their name to that. I mean, that speaks volumes as to what kind of stronghold they have over. It's scary, really, when you think of it. Like, that should not be the case in any way, shape, or form, but yet here it is. So I hope more people with more influence, you know, really put some question to that, because that's an eye opener in itself, you know.
We hit all this, the 400, you know, they brought up the Israel Hamas thing, which is, you know, we're touching on that for our next topic. You know, unfortunately, we the United States have seen our first casualties, known casualties in relation to the conflict, Israel Hamas conflict. For those of you that don't know, a special operations helicopter, a special operations Black Hawk helicopter crashed during a refueling operation in the Eastern Mediterranean over the weekend. And we lost five members of the amazing Task Force 160 Night Stalker Special Operation Aviation Regiment, the Night Stalkers, who are the best pilots, helicopter pilots in the world, bar none. I've flown with those guys a handful of times, and the professionalism and competency and the capabilities of those guys is unmatched in the aviation world anywhere. I don't care. I have the utmost respect for those folks. Just one of the best organizations in the military. But they were doing a refueling operation, which is, you know, dangerous in and of itself, and crashed into the Eastern Mediterranean. Now, you know, everybody's going to ask, why were they there? And those folks with that capability, and I said this from the beginning, you and I started talking about, well, what do we do? What do we send? What's off the coast? What's there? And I said that we would always have a special operations capability nearby, you know, and that's what these folks amount to. And they're there to fly, you know, Army, all special operators, Army, Navy, whether it's the SEALs or whoever. I mean, that's who they move around. I would tell you they're probably there for hostage rescue kind of operations, at least at the moment. But also in support of things going on in Syria that are, you know, have been ongoing for years now, really. But this is being directly related to the forces in the theater, specifically in the Eastern Med, in support of or potentially in support of the Israel-Hamas conflict. So this is not a cavalier statement, so please do not take it this way. This is the price of doing business. And it's the ultimate price. It is sad that this happened, but for everybody who sit on the fringes of stuff like this, whether it's Ukraine, whatever conflict it is, and all the saber rattling from those at home that's, we should be involved. We should, you know, the U.S. has to do whatever. This is what happens. No BSing around, no bullshitting around. Unfortunately, these five men are gone, mm-hmm. and they're gone forever, right? They're Valhalla right now, yeah. because we have stuck our nose in the middle of this at the demands of really the constituency of the United States, of the, you know, the citizenry. And this is the price of doing business. We haven't even done anything that is of note. We have done nothing but get in position to provide support. And we have now lost five warriors that we can't get back, that we can't replace. And that's the damn shame of all of it. So, you know, I'm a little bit on my soapbox, and I apologize, Elsa, but
No. Have at it. Please do.
It irritates the shit out of me because there are so many people who've never had this touch their lives before, who are so adamant about what we should do as a nation. And let me tell you something, those five families, and not just those five families, those five families are suffering horribly, but there's an entire organization in the United States Army right now that is suffering at the loss of those five individuals. And it's because somebody decided that this is what we needed to do, not realizing that whether we started shooting or not, people are at risk every single day when we do stuff like this. And these kinds of things happen. And this is the price you pay. This is the price to be paid. And again, it's not cavalier, it's reality. Those five gentlemen are gone and they're not coming back. And it's a damn shame that it has to happen for something that truthfully we're not directly involved in. Mm-hmm. So for everybody, and again, I'll get off my soapbox, but before you start saber rattling about where we should stick our nose and how many of our warriors we should commit to stuff like this, you think about those five families. Before you start committing the lives of individuals to stuff like this, because you're not committing the Army, you're committing people, real friggin' people who sacrifice and die for really no damn good reason at times. And this is one of them. Okay, I'm off my soapbox.
No, you know what, Clay? That was such a necessary soapbox moment because you're so right. You're so profoundly right that that's exactly what happens. People forget that these are human beings. These are fathers, sons, brothers, husbands. These are somebody's loved ones who are doing a job that, let's face it, the rest of us are too chicken shit to do. It simply cannot do for whatever reason or won't do. So, you know, to commit their lives to something that you're sitting there being your couch critic, your couch warrior, about and directing the lives of other people of what should be done, you should probably sit back and just shut the hell up. So I'm glad that you said what you said. And I do have the names of these five heroes, and I'd like to take a minute and just give them some recognition. We're going to put their picture back up. I'm going to put my glasses on because otherwise I can't see. So the five service members who died were Chief Warrant Officer 3, Stephen R. Dwyer. He was 38 of Clarksville, Tennessee. Chief Warrant Officer 2, Shane M. Barnes. He was 34 of Sacramento, California. Staff Sergeant Tanner W. Grone, 26 of Gorham, New Hampshire. Sergeant Andrew P. Southard, 27 of Apache Junction, Arizona, and Sergeant Cade M. Wolf, 24 of Mankato, Minnesota. And I'm sorry if I pronounced anything wrong there. Please forgive me. I know you're going to correct me in the notes, but we would be so remiss if we didn't say their names. And Clay, I'm so glad that you took that moment to really drive that point home, because it's important and it matters, and they mattered. But,
yeah. And it's, you know, it hits close to home for me every time I see stuff like this. You know, the, as much time as I spent deployed, the worst parts of it were standing, you know, by helicopters in the middle of the night, standing at the back of a ramp of a cargo plane in the middle of the night, and, you know, long, slow salutes to, you know, send off, you know, warriors like that as they leave theater and head back, you know, to the United States for their family to grieve and to bury them and all of those things. And those are the ones that, you know, I don't care who you are, and I've lost friends, you know, all of us have, that, you know, fought through the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. But they're real people, and you know, there's a bunch of people hurting today over the loss of those five warriors, and you can't understate it. You just can't.
Right. Yeah. So true. And we're, you know, ironically in the shadow of Veterans Day, and you know, it drives for anyone who has loved, whoever, like you, who have served, for someone like me and others who have loved ones who've served in combat, especially, it's just a whole different, everything has a different meaning. Everything is deeper. The colors are brighter. All of the things, the appreciation is deeper.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I will never tell an American citizen that they shouldn't voice their opinion about our military, how our military should be run, because we all work, you know, the military works for the citizenry, truthfully. Mm-hmm. I just, you know, my point to all of this is that it's not just a big green machine or a big blue machine or whatever you know, have in your mind. And it's not a movie. You should always voice your opinion. You should always vote whether or not, you know, the United States should commit forces for the good of humanity, which is what we do. But you also have to remember there's a price to be paid, and there are real people who are going to pay that price. That's my point. And sometimes real people have to pay those prices for the price. It's the price of freedom. It's the price for humanity that has to be paid to keep things going, you know, the direction that humanity needs them to go. But they are real people. So you should never just take that lightly, that we should just, you know, commit continuously over and over again to every little, you know, brush fire around the world that happens. The U.S. doesn't need to stick their nose into everything, because you're sticking real people in the middle of those messes. And unfortunately, this is the price of doing business. It just is, no matter what.
Well said.
Somebody's going to get hurt.
It's just gut wrenching. We are going to switch over into with something that seems kind of surreal. Like this is, you know, we go from something like that, talking about, you know, heroes that have made the ultimate sacrifice. And it really drives the absurdity of something like this home. Clay, I'm gonna let you go ahead and run with this one. You go ahead and explain, because this is not even my lane. It just blows my mind. So go ahead and give them the little background on this.
Yeah. So the short version, and I want to make sure that I get this right too, is that Texas A&M football just fired their coach. Okay. Jimbo Fisher, who has been a coach in a number of places, collegiate coach, a number of places. So he just got fired and he's getting paid out $76 million.
Say it again for the people in the back. Fired
coach. Not even to coach, to not coach. He's getting paid $76 million. Now, the absurdity in all of this, Elsa, is, you know, he's a collegiate football coach. Okay. Mm-hmm. He's a collegiate football coach. So that means, and this has been proven in multiple states, the coach in Alabama football is the highest paid state employee in the state of Alabama. Okay. By a long shot. But he's a state employee because it's a state school. Mm-hmm. So the discussion really is, you know, NCAA, you know, is collegiate. Their focus is supposed to be on education. So why are they paying guys like this $76 million? And what in the world is education benefiting or not benefiting from based on athletics?
Right.
And the reality is that unfortunately or unfortunately, college football, and if everybody remembers back to COVID, they were trying so hard to keep college football going during COVID. Right. And the reason they were doing that was because college football and men's college basketball are the only two collegiate sports that make money. Mm. The rest of them exist off of the money made from football and men's basketball. So without those sports, without football and basketball is a far second place behind football, even with the NCAA tournament, you know, 64, March Madness, all that stuff, still far behind football. But without those two sports, the rest of NCAA athletics don't exist. They cannot be funded as they stand today. So the catch 22, damned if you do, damned if you don't, is do you continue to make college football as big as you can make it and pay guys like Jimbo Fisher $76 million to benefit the rest of the athletic programs and therefore the colleges that they're associated with, or do you just cut it, you know, to a manageable level and say, listen, we're not going to pay people like this anymore. You know, it's just not going to happen. And we're going to, you know, we're just going to focus on academics.
Right.
Because the reality is that the universities benefit off of their sports. They do. And you can't say, you know, well, if we had, and I've seen this, and I've seen this from some people that I know that say, well, could you imagine what we could do in academics with the $76 million they're going to pay Jimbo Fisher? Well, I don't disagree. You could do a lot with $76 million, but without college football, you wouldn't have the $76 million regardless because it generates NCAA sports is a $16 billion business. $16 billion. Okay.
Billion.
So you wouldn't have the $76 million to pay Jimbo Fisher if you didn't have college sports in the first place. And if you didn't have college sports in the first place, you wouldn't have $76 million to spend on academics. So, you know, you can say what you want about the evils or the misappropriation or the bad priorities about collegiate sports versus focusing on academics, depending on the college, but it's a business and they do benefit each other. Is $76 million an obscene amount of money? Yeah. Yes.
To not coach.
Yeah.
Like it's even bad enough to coach, to get paid to coach that kind of money. But to get paid that kind of money to not coach is so mind-boggling that I simply can't wrap my brain around the rationale. And you brought up really great points, you know, things that I didn't know. So I had no idea that it was such a money-making business. I had no idea. It certainly makes sense now in light of thinking back to COVID, you know, how hard that was still getting pushed. They're playing in empty stadiums, you know, with no people and or no spectators, I mean. And it was like, why? And well, there's the why, you know, there's money to be made and money to be lost here. And I mean, how do you even remedy this? So I guess some of the questions I would have, I'm thinking, is this money to pay these people, is this coming from like tuitions? Because it's like a big deal to go to this school. I mean, where does all the money come from? And it might be a stupid question. Forgive me.
No, it's a good question. Know. No, it's a really good question. And I, to be honest with you, it depends, I think, and I'm far from an expert on this, but you know, it's a state school. Texas A&M mm-hmm. is a state school. So there is money that comes, you know, from the state to an extent, but it's also sure. money brought in by the university. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? It's a business, right? It does.
Right.
I mean, you can almost think of it like the NFL, right? You know, the okay. Dallas Cowboys sell out. They make so much money. They can afford to pay players and coaches, whatever mm-hmm. they can, because of the money coming in. This is very similar, okay. but you also have the backing of the state, right? Mm. You have the backing of, you know, the state of Texas in this case. But okay. now think of private university, right? Now you've got donors, alumni right. association behind a lot of this. There's also some federal funding, although I don't know how that bleeds over into academics or from academics into athletics, but you know, it's a good question to ask, is where mm-hmm. does that money come from?
Right. You know, and it does kind of color, kind of color my opinion as to, you know, how I feel about it. You know, so first and foremost, of course, I find the numbers absurd. They're just silly, sure. you know, and yes, of course, that money could be used in so many more better ways. But the flip side of that is if they're bringing in the money, you know, to fund these things. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking I may not really like it. I may not love it by any means, but it kind of does seem fair. You brought the money in, you did the thing. So I guess it's up to you what you do with it, even if it's absurd. I don't know. I just, yeah, you know, go ahead.
It is. And again, there, you know, the draw is being a good football program,
right?
The better you are, the more you sell, the better players you recruit, the better your, you know, your TV percentages, the mm-hmm. better your, all that stuff, the merchandising, all of that matters. And he, like any other professional coach, evidently is not doing his job very well. And they got rid of him. They fired him. Well, right. good for him for making sure that his contract was structured, that he still makes money even if he gets fired.
Very right? smart.
So shame on Texas A&M probably, and the yeah. board and the athletic department and whoever signed off on the contract. Shame on them for agreeing to this crap in the first place. So bad right. business decision. But you know, that's really what it boils down to, is he sucks at his job and he got fired.
Yeah.
So
I would like to, like to suck at my job
yeah.
in exactly that way. Yeah. If we only had this big corporate agreement where we could suck at our job so badly and, you know, get paid to stop. If y'all want to yeah. pay us to stop making our show,
yeah.
I mean, make an offer.
Happily.
We'll entertain those offers, but you know.
Yeah, but again, so the income, and to take it a little one step further with athletics, mm-hmm. is not only does football and basketball fund essentially the rest of NCAA sports, but that translates to scholarship opportunities for athletes. Okay. And you can argue the whole, you know, how much should they get paid? How many opportunities should be out there? You know, the Title IX male versus female equality, how many scholarships, both male, you know, for one, for the other, but without those big football programs, without the big basketball programs, that whole structure starts to fall apart. All
right.
So now you not only start to lose athletic programs. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you something, during COVID, dirty little secret, the scholarship opportunities for all of the other sports got curtailed.
Wow.
Almost all schools, they lost scholarships because they didn't have the money to pay them.
Sure.
But that's why they were fighting so hard to keep basketball and football going, mm-hmm. for the TV rights, for the jersey sales, for all those things. So when you cut back on those, you start to lose scholarship opportunities for other athletes in other sports. So now you really are losing educational opportunities, mm-hmm. for people who wouldn't have had them in the past. So this is a very windy kind of road with a whole bunch of offshoots into different places. And I'm not all for spending $76 million to pay a guy not to coach. I think that's nuts.
Right.
But there's a lot of good that comes out of NCAA athletics to benefit sports other than football and basketball.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, kind of where you got to be.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you laid out a pretty fair argument on both sides of it, really. You know, there's the emotional gut punch reaction of, are you kidding me? That kind of money for somebody not to do their job. Wow, that's absurd in this day and age. And when you're just talking about people who risk their lives and lose their lives for love of country. And you know, where's their, you know, family's multi-million dollar payouts, you know, for that, not that that would make it better by any means, but you know, so you have that whole emotional response to it. And then there's that flip side of it, you know, business is business and this is a business and, you know, they're in the business to make money and there are people, like you said, benefiting from it. So, Clay and I would love to know your thoughts on that. Where do you, I mean, on all the things we talked about today, give us your thoughts on all of them. And I had a great time talking all these topics. I love this. I missed our back and forth last week, so I'm glad to be back at it.
It's always better. It's better together.
Yeah, definitely. Clay, anything you want to tell him before we say goodnight?
Two things. You and I talked about this before we started recording. So because of the holiday, and Elsa and I both have, you know, personal lives with lots of stuff going on. So we're going to take a break next week. We're just going to take a break. We're not going to be recording next week, but we'll be back right after Thanksgiving. So there's that. But also thanks for letting me stand on my soapbox. I did go do a veteran thing this past weekend and spent some time with some paratroopers and a lot of friends. And I went and jumped out of a, you know, perfectly good airplane for the 83rd time in my life. And I love it. You know, it just reminds me of everything that I did for 25 years. And God bless all the veterans out there, you know, for everything that everybody's done. But finally, as always, check out the book. It's out there. Keep moving, keep shooting.
I love it. Awesome. Awesome. And thank you again for your service. You are so appreciated. And all of our viewers who have or are serving, we thank you as well. And we wish everyone a peaceful, happy Thanksgiving wherever you are and whatever you're doing. We love you and we're glad to be part of your lives. And we will see you the week after next. Take care.